Chapter 36. "Your shad roe and scrambled eggs, Mr. Bell," announced the diner steward with a broad smile that faded as he saw the expression on Bell's face change from pleasurable anticipation to rage. 2 hours from its destination, the 20th Century Limited had picked up Chicago morning newspapers left by an eastbound express. A crisp edition folded at each place setting greeted the passengers at breakfast. "Explosion in U.S. Navy torpedo station at Newport. 2 officers blown to atoms. Newport, Rhode Island, May 15th. An explosion that caused death and destruction occurred in the naval torpedo station at Newport. It killed 2 naval officers and wrecked a production line." Isaac Bell was stunned. Had he gone in the wrong direction? "Good morning, Bell. You haven't touched your roe. Has it turned?" "Morning, Riker. No, it smells fine. Bad news in the paper." Riker opened his as he sat.
"Good Lord. What caused it?"
"It doesn't say. Excuse me." Bell went back to his stateroom. If not an accident but sabotage, then the spy's reach was as broad as it was vicious. In the course of a single day, his ring had executed a traitor in Washington, murdered a detective hot on his trail in New York, and blown up a heavily guarded naval station on the Rhode Island coast. Isaac Bell set up temporary headquarters in the back of the LaSalle Station luggage room within minutes of the 20th Century steaming into Chicago. Van Dorn detectives from the Palmer House head office had already blanketed his railroad station. They followed his suspects as they scattered. Larry Rosania promptly vanished. A veteran Chicago detective was reporting embarrassedly when another rushed in.
"Isaac, the old man says to telephone long distance from the station master's private office and make sure you're alone."
Bell did so.
Van Dorn asked, "Are you alone?"
"Yes, sir." "Was either of the officers killed, Ron Wheeler?"
"No."
Bell breathed a huge sigh of relief.
"Wheeler snuck off to spend the night with a woman. If he hadn't, he'd be dead too. It was his people who were killed."
"Thank the Lord he wasn't. Captain Falconer says he's irreplaceable."
"Well, here is something else irreplaceable," Van Dorn growled.
600 miles of copper telephone wire between Chicago and Washington did not diminish the sound of his anger.
"This is not in the newspapers, and it won't ever be. Are you still alone there, Isaac?"
"Yes, sir."
"Listen to me. The Navy has suffered a terrible loss. The explosion started a fire. The fire destroyed their entire arsenal of experimental electric torpedoes that had been imported from England. Wheeler's people had apparently improved their range and accuracy vastly. More important... much more important. Wheeler's people figured out a way to arm the warheads with dynamite. The Navy secretary told me this morning. He is distraught. So much so he is threatening to offer the president his resignation. Apparently the use of TNT would have made U.S. torpedoes 10 times more powerful underwater."
"Can we assume it was not an accident?"
"We have to," Van Dorn answered flatly. "And even though the Navy is nominally in charge of guarding their own facility, they are extremely disappointed with Van Dorn Protection Services."
Isaac Bell said nothing.
"I don't have to explain the consequences of being a government entity's target of blame, deserved or not," Van Dorn continued. "And I am not entirely sure what you were doing in Chicago when the spy attacked in Newport."
This did require an answer, and Bell said, "The Great White Fleet is about to make landfall in San Francisco. Scully was tracking the spy, or his agents, to San Francisco. Thanks to Scully, I very likely have him in my sights."
"What do you suppose he intends to do?"
"I don't know yet. But it must involve the fleet, and I am going to stop him before he does it." Van Dorn remained silent for a long minute. Bell said nothing. Finally, the boss said,
"I hope you know what you're doing, Isaac."
"He will not pack his bags and go home after Newport. He will attack the fleet. Van Dorn said, All right. I'll alert Bronson in San Francisco. I already have. He went back to the luggage room. Van Dorn's reported that Herr Schaefer and the Chinese traveling with Arnold Bennett had transferred to the Overland Limited to San Francisco, as their tickets had indicated. Their train's leaving, Isaac. If you're going with them, you gotta go. I'm going. Two strong horses pulled an ice wagon modified with carriage springs and pneumatic tires instead of hard rubber, which made its ride unusually smooth on the rough cobbled streets that slanted down to Newport's waterfront. No one took note in the dim light of the thinly scattered gas lamps that the driver clutching the brake handle cut too slight and boyish a figure to heave 100-pound blocks of ice onto a fishing dock. And if anyone thought it odd that the driver was singing to her horses, You can't remember what I can't forget, in a soft soprano, they kept their opinions to themselves. The seamen of Newport had been smuggling rum, tobacco, slaves, and opium for 300 years. If a girl wanted to entertain her horses while delivering ice to a boat in the dark, that was her business. The boat was a rugged, broad-beamed, 30-foot catboat with a stubby mast ahead of a low coach roof. With its gaff-rigged sail that was nearly square and a centerboard instead of a fixed keel, it was faster than it looked and equally at home in shallow bays and off the coast. A gang of men in slickers and wool watch caps climbed out of the cabin. While the girl stood watch with her hands buried in her pockets, the men drew the canvas off the ice wagon's cargo, inclined a ramp of planks between the wagon and dock, and gently slid 4 17-foot-long cigar-shaped metal tubes down the ramp one by one. They shifted the ramp and slid all four into the boat and lashed them securely to a cushioned bed of canvas sails. When they were done, the wide wooden hull squatted low in the water. All but one of the men climbed into the wagon and drove away. The man who stayed raised the sail and untied the mooring lines. The girl took the tiller and sailed the boat skillfully off the dock and into the night. That same night, the westbound Overland Limited's first night out of Chicago, reports waiting for Bell at Rock Island, Illinois, confirmed that the gem merchant Riker had indeed boarded the California Limited to San Diego. Still disliking coincidences, Bell wired Horace Bronson, head of the San Francisco office, asking him to assign James Dashwood, a young operative who had proven himself on the Wrecker case, to intercept the California Limited at Los Angeles. Dashwood should see whether Riker actually continued on to San Diego to purchase pink tourmaline gems or change trains to San Francisco. Regardless, the young detective would trail Riker and observe his subsequent actions. Bell warned Bronson that Riker was traveling with a bodyguard named Plimpton who would be watching his back. Then he wired research back in New York, asking for more information on the death of Riker's father in South Africa and urging Grady Forer to step up the hunt for information about his ward. Lawrence Rosania's disappearance upon arrival had set off a frantic manhunt. But when Bell reached Des Moines, Iowa, the information was waiting that the retired thief, after giving his Van Dorn shadows the slip out of habit or professional pride, had been written up in the Chicago Tribune marriage announcements and was scheduled to steam toward a San Francisco honeymoon in his bride's private car. So much for admonishing youth that crime did not pay, noted the Chicago Van Dorn headquarters. Herr Schaefer, Arnold Bennett, and Bennett's Chinese companions had transferred to the Overland Limited to San Francisco, and it was with them that Bell continued on the journey west, hoping to pick up additional information from research at the station stops, along with what he could detect in their presence. Then, New York wired that Schaefer was definitely a German spy. Herr Schaefer was an active cavalry officer, still serving as a major in the German army. His real name was Cornelius von Nieren, and von Nieren was expert in land tactics and the use of quickly laid narrow-gauge railroads to supply an army's front lines. Whatever he was spying on in America had nothing to do with Hull 44. Formidable on land, Archie wrote, but wouldn't know a dreadnought from a birch bark canoe.